Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. You know Brian from when he's been on the pod. They post episodes on Tuesday and Friday mornings bright and early. The NBA playoffs are in full swing, so be sure to check it out for the latest analysis and reactions. You can follow Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. 30 for 30 is back with Breakaway, a film about WNBA superstar and activist Maya Moore. This film explores the story of Moore, one of the best basketball players in the world, stepping away from the sport for a remarkable reason, to fight for a man she believed was wrongly imprisoned. Watch Breakaway on ESPN+. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth coming to you live from, that's a daddy's basement you got there, boy. Like, I look at that furniture set up right there, that daddy room.
I wish I had anything that was only mine anymore. I mean, they know when I'm down here that I'm not looking for them, but it doesn't stop them from coming to find me, to be honest with you. I'm gonna have to shoot somebody out of here.
They don't even knock first.
Sure. Nah, they don't knock. The oldest one, the 10-year-old knocks. 8 and 5, they feel like the world is theirs and they do whatever they want.
Yeah, they got the approach. Like, 5-year-olds have the approach to knocking on your door that your mama got knocking on your door. I used to ask my mom, like, could you please knock? As a teenager, could you please knock before you come in? Because, you know. Yeah. But anyway, she, rather than knock, she would, like, call it out when she would start heading up the steps. I'm coming in.
Dude, they don't even do, like, the knocking open, because, like, the point of knocking is to get their attention and then wait. Like, you knock and wait for somebody to say, come on in. But I feel like what my parents would do is do the knock and open. So yes, it's like they knocking, but they opening at the same time. It's like, all right. They just want me to stop doing whatever I'm doing in case it's going to embarrass me.
But the problem is that knock and turn don't necessarily give you enough time to spare yourself from the embarrassment. Right? Like, come on, man.
Yeah, I need a little bit more time. I don't know. The funny thing about like, this whole week, we've been trying to get back into some of the school stuff with the kids so that we don't have a complete summer drop-off. And we talk about incentives a lot, you and me, because of, like, economics in general. And so, like, trying to incentivize kids seems obvious, where you connect the things they want with the things that you want them to do. Except when your kids are smart enough to know that those aren't real incentives. So, like, you think about, why do you go hunting? Why do animals hunt? It's because they know if they don't hunt, they're not going to eat. And so I'm talking to my son, like, you're going to have to do this math before you get to the iPad. He's smart enough to realize, like, no, actually, we don't have to do this math to get to the iPad. You can just give me the iPad. And I'm like, I'm trying to set up these faulty incentives, and it's just not working. I mean, we eventually get it done, but it's after 45 minutes of negotiating. I'm like, you could have been done by now. He don't care. It's the point. Like, I'm not going to do it just because you said to do it. I'm going to make sure you know that I know this is a ridiculous contrivance. Yes. I'm going to do it under protest.
And in 2021, you don't really have access to the convincing tools that your parents had, right? Like, all this negotiating with children is a relatively new phenomenon. That was not what it is back in the day. I'll tell you this story. My buddy Nick Wright, his daughter, who is like my favorite person in the world just about, right? When she was 3 years old, I will never forget this. They had just moved into a place here in New York, and they lived literally across the street from a toy store. Like, I'm sorry, you got to say no to that as a parent. Like, that would be my thought there. Like, I just don't know how that goes. Like, we can't have that, right? That is literally putting the attic right across the street from the dope house. You know what I'm saying?
That's the same analogy I exactly thought. Like, that's the same thing I thought. Toys? Oh, that's like coke.
Not right? Everybody can live across the street from the liquor store. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not the game you want to play. And so I'll never forget, she came in, she was 3 years old. She says, Daddy, I want to go to the toy store. And Nick was trying to get out of it somehow, but he says, okay, well, what are my options? And she says, well, we could go to the toy store and you buy me something and there is no other option. That's the one. Right? Like she was like, why would I give you this other thing to choose from when I know exactly what it is that I want?
That's it. I mean, you can't negotiate with terrorists, and that's what little kids are, frankly. They're tiny little terrorizers, and I learned that lesson a long time ago, where it's like, some things you can't talk your way through, because they are smart enough to understand it, but not quite strategic enough, because, like, you need someone on the other end to, like, care about the outcome if you're going to negotiate with somebody. But sometimes at a certain age with certain kids, they just don't care. And you sitting there trying to negotiate with them, like, nah, like, this conversation's going to end. I can't punch you because it has escalated to the point where words are no longer working. So violence is obviously not something we can do. So we're just going to stop talking. Like, I just got to walk away. You're going to have to walk away and reconsider. Yeah. That's my best move.
The thing about kids is we always talk about, like, innocence, right? Like, that's the big thing that people, you know, like to refer to with children. They're so innocent. But, like, what it really comes down to is they get to the point. You know what I'm saying? Like all the noise. They whittle away, get past all the noise, and whatever the point is to them, they get to that point.
That's the perfect thing. So I said this a long time ago when I first started to have kids. It helped me to understand adults, because we are not that much different. The difference between kids and adults in most cases is adults have figured out how to mask all the nonsense. Like the kids, they don't mask it. They are straightforward about what they want, how they want it, when they go get it. They don't realize that it might serve them to lie and take you around a while, or to pretend that you don't want what you do want. And I see that in adults too. They just go the other direction. And especially with my son, and I know there are some gender dynamics that seem pretty obvious to me, but at least in my household, I recognize that the major difference between me and my son is I think some ideas are bad ideas. he has not quite got to that point yet. Like, all ideas are good ideas. If I thought about it, I need to
put it on the road, right? Only one way to find out, right? only one way to go. Now, like, part of why kids hurt your feelings is the effort to not hurt your feelings is noise. They don't really do noise. Exactly. My favorite story about Shannon's daughter, because Shannon has this amazing, like, does a million different things, all excellently daughter, right? She was like 3 or 4. Shannon got in the car one day, was like, see, you didn't even tell me that I'm the best daddy in the world today. And Shannon said, yes, you're the best daddy in the world. Mommy's the best mommy in the world. Braylon's the best brother in the world. And I was like, well, Shannon, am I the best Bomani in the world? And she goes, I don't know. And at first, I was about to try to, like, logic with it and be like, I'm the only Bomani you ever heard of. And then I realized that's the point. She don't have data points on me. She got data points on these daddies. She's met other people's brothers. They pale in comparison to what she got. You know what I'm saying? Me, she looked at me and was like, nope, I'm going to need to do a little more research.
I mean, I think it's moms that experience that worse than anyone else, the honesty of kids. Like, they keep it all the way real. And then the complicating factor is that some of the things that they may be judging about are things that their being born has probably caused, or have contributed to. But yeah, you gotta have high self-esteem, be quite self-assured to be walking around kids naked. And sometimes I know it's a crazy thing to say for people who don't have kids, but anyone who has kids knows that sometimes stuff is going down, and the kids will remind you that you are not looking as tight as you should. You don't look like Thor when you run around the house, because that's they're used to cartoons and TV shows. Like, that's what people are supposed to look like. Nah,
I tell you this though,
that ain't what we look like.
Little you can't say nothing to them about themselves though. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're like, yo, it's just the truth when they say it. You got to tiptoe around everything to make sure this don't turn into a cry fest.
Oh yeah. Or you just go ahead and go in for this crop test, because it's going to happen. Sometimes I can't bite my tongue. Like, you're going to get the real. This math, you should have had this.
See, I do.
Why don't you focus
I do really well with just the fundamental understanding that they are children. You know what I mean? Like just fundamentally getting that they're going to say some things to you because they're kids. They're going to be loud sometimes because they're kids. Like, I'm the guy that can babysit kids that scream for 2 hours. Why? Once I realize that I am not on the clock to fix this, that this is out of my hands, it's going to get a little bit annoying, you know? Like, there are going to be points where I'm like, man, I sure wish this noise would stop. But I ain't going to be the one to panic or nothing else. Oh, okay, they kids. This is just what it is. Kids going to say some wild stuff to you every now and then. Like, you cannot allow children to hurt your feelings because you will be done forever.
That's the thing about feelings, though. You're not in control of them. You can still get them hurt.
I feel like you can take your feelings to the gym. You know what I'm saying? Like.
Oh, okay, maybe. I mean, you can take them to the gym, but if you haven't already taken them to the gym, yeah, and they drop that 225 pounds on your chest, it's too late.
You know, now is the time to learn. Damn, yeah, late. Now is like once you get them, you're gonna have to start getting a little strumpf about those feelings. Because they coming out here, they coming to test it. It ain't even got to be your kids. It's on and popping. They coming to test you. And don't let your breath stink, boy. Like, think about, oh. I was thinking about this the other day, right? Is there anything else that just gets you insulted by people? Or people get insulted by, like, your breath stinks, right? Like, a very fundamental thing that in any setting, like, you don't ever want to be the person with bad breath. Because the person that's musty, you kind of feel like they got some corrective solutions. Like, maybe they just not employing them. Maybe it was a long day. But day after day, your breath stinks. Nobody's going to tell you because there's no way to delicately tell you that your breath stinks.
Yeah, I was hosting the ESPYs post show, and it's loud out there. We're doing interviews, so I'm getting real close to these celebrities to ask them questions, and these sports stars to ask them questions. And I did the first couple rounds of interview without mints. And I mean, I didn't feel like my breath was stinking, but I knew it wasn't like at its freshest. And you know how you feel that in your mouth where it kind of feel a little like, yeah, this ain't right. I had to go get me some mints because whether they was going to remember it or not, I didn't want their questions to be influenced by this. I didn't, or their answers to be influenced by this. I didn't want them to remember this experience. Like, yeah, that Foxworth kid, a little stale. Right.
As with every passing interview, the answers get shorter and shorter. Right. They're like, yo, why your questions so long? Stop asking me these two-part questions, man. Like, let's get straight to it. I went to high school with a dude. His breath was so bad. I remember once during a basketball game, I was not on the team, but they say he came to the bench and somebody was like, damn, who fought it? And they weren't even joking. It was a legitimate question in the moment.
That's terrible. We had one of my high school teammates on the football team. Remember the, there were like pills that, like mint pills that you would swallow. I forgot what they were called, but anyway, he used to carry them things around with him. And they didn't work. Like, there's a difference between your breath stinking and being stale, or you didn't brush, or whatever. You just been talking all day, or you haven't talked in a while. Like, those things. There's a difference when you got halitosis. Like, you got something clinical. Yes. My man had something clinical. I'm sure that at some point he had to get some prescription, or he's still a virgin. Like, this, like, for real. Because he wasn't, like, a dirty kid. He brushed his teeth. He come in. He smelled clean. Everything was clean. And, like, it was a different kind of stink. Like, it was the oral surgery stink, except all the time. And we didn't know. And like, you know, we ruthless roast them for the first few months. And then it wasn't funny no more because we was like, oh, no, nah, this is this like making fun of somebody with a disability because like you got something going on. You need to talk to a doctor immediately.
You ever come across a bad one with bad breath?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That is. Well, I mean, you win something, you lose something, man. You gotta.
It helps you understand what your priorities are or not. You know what I'm saying?
You might be a better man than me because I just had to persevere, yeah, man. I ain't a quitter.
Yeah, sometimes just like, yo, man, I love Altoids. this is my love language. This is how I speak love. I offer Altoids.
I want to give.
Yeah, man. How was the ESPYs?
And if you reject it, I feel disrespected. Yes. It was good, man. It was good. It was a smaller event, and it was really only like athletes and actors and stuff there, which was kind of cool. It was a private setting. Then the rain came, and everybody was like panicking for a second, but it kind of made it more fun because we all got collected in the back area in order to avoid the rain, and so that it made it easier for me to grab people to interview and hang out, and then afterwards had a little like unofficial after party, and I wasn't planning on going to a party, but I'm vaxxed up. People was there. It was just great to be in that type of like social setting again. And it wasn't like without any worries. Like I was still looking around at certain athletes, depending on what sport they play. Like, I ain't getting close to you. You might be making these different type of decisions. I was looking at these people that way. So it wasn't like completely stress-free, but it was nice just to be in there having a good time with people and laughing and not stressed out, at least at the highest level of stress about coronavirus for the first time in a long time.
So for people who don't know, the ESPYs is not a you work here, so we got you proposition. Mm-hmm. Getting an ESPY invite, whether it be to work the ESPYs or just to go or whatever it is, is not easy. There are a lot of people. Like, I talked to Scott Van Pelt about this once, and he's been to the ESPY some small number of times, like on one side of one hand type of situation. Like, you don't really get that call. Man, I want to say it was either 2014 or 2015. I can't remember which. I feel like it was 2015. I didn't get the invite to the ESPYs, but I put in some calls, and I got the plug on the after party tickets. Like, that's what I wanted. And so I mentioned the year because I was becoming somebody around these things. You know, like, they had just bumped Highly Questionable mm-hmm. up from ESPN2 mm-hmm. to ESPN. People starting to write stories about me and stuff like that. Like, I'm starting to feel like somebody. So I'm ready to go to ESPYs. And so, like, I called my best friend from 1987. You know what I'm saying? Live in Texas. I'm like, yo, man, mm-hmm. let's go out to L.A., man. Let's do this ESPY thing, right? Like, this is my man I rode the bus with, man. We about to hit the ESPYs. It's about to be cracking.
Nice.
My plane, and I flew in the day of. Okay. Uh-huh. Dog. My plane landed late. Not the biggest deal in the world. My luggage landed much later. My luggage landed like 3-4 days later.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think the ESPYs are typically on a Wednesday. So I got there on Wednesday. My luggage ain't come. It wasn't an option for me in my fit to go do ESPY stuff.
Yeah.
I was in L.A. for 4 days. I did not get my gear until the night before I left. The night before I left. That's when I got
so
my.
So, what'd you wear? Did you go? You bought something for the ESPYs? What'd you wear?
I didn't go. I didn't have time to go. I didn't have time to like gear up. And because the thing about it is, you know my body. I ain't got an off the rack body. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Like for that occasion, there was no fit that I could go get on short notice that wouldn't either have me out here flooding or looking like it was 1999. Yeah. Like, I just didn't have options, dog. It was so disappointing. Ain't nobody called me about no damn ESPY nothing since. You know what I'm saying? Like, none of this has happened. You know, like, I was peaking at this place around that time. You know what I'm saying? That was my chance.
I do have an off-the-rack body, which is quite a blessing because the coat, I didn't even get altered, and I bought it for like $120 on the internet. I just Googled pink sport coat, came in, threw it on. But I don't often think of myself as a celebrity because obviously, like, I mean, whatever. Mm-hmm. People come up to me on the street and they say, hey, ESPN.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right? ESPN. Like, that's essentially it. And so, like, that's not really all that cool. But at the ESPYs?
Oh, you somebody.
It felt like everybody knew who I was. And like real legitimate celebrities was coming up to me trying to talk to me. And it was like the weirdest thing where I'm thinking, all right, I'm supposed to be doing these post-show interviews. So I got to break the ice with these celebrities. And I'm like, hey, how you doing? I'm Dominique. You mind coming over for an interview? They're like, oh, Fox, I know you. Like you. And they didn't want to talk about their sports team. Like it was crazy to have that experience when Anthony Mackie was talking to me about my own takes. I was like, oh, I forget how like... For like real sports fans, like they know us for real. And like for the celebrities who are also real sports fans who oftentimes are home throughout the middle of the day, they watch us and they know us. It was just a cool experience to have that.
Anybody ask about me?
Yeah, everybody. It was like, where's Bomani? I was like, man, he moving this weekend. Otherwise, he'd be here. He messed around and host the whole thing. But what, they gave it to Anthony because he had to move.
Anybody ask you about Foxworth Fridays? I'm just saying. I just thought that Foxworth Fridays had become a thing. You know what I'm saying? And like, it would have got out there.
They'd be popping.
Now, yeah. The thing about this.
Bodega Boys was talking about Foxworth Fridays.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, the homies. That'll work.
Those your boys.
But that's. It is an interesting thing, as you mentioned, with dudes in particular. Like, we are very famous with dudes, especially like people who do music. ESPN's on in studio all the time, and it's a lot of dudes that's at home in the middle of the day because they got that different kind of job. And so, like, that's the thing about working at the Seaport, is that there's no telling who was going to come in there, and cats are coming in and they really feel like they know you and vice versa because they watch you so much. Like, you could tell if a celebrity knew who you were, and if they did, you ain't even have to say nothing. You just walked over and dapped up. Like, it just went real, like, oh man, what's going on? Good to see you, brother. You know, like that kind of setup. I tell you though, you talk about the like feeling famous, but also like, yo, ESPN type thing. I went to Kenny Smith's All-Star Game party in 2013 in Houston. Right? And so again, 2013. So this is before I started like full time doing Highly Questionable. So like, we getting there. I'm just doing Around the Horn, right? I'm in the party, and some dude, and I'm assuming that he was on Cootie Brown, like he had to have been Slizzard, but he sees me, and it's like old buddy coming to America with the beverages. You know what I'm saying? He's there, dog. Yo, what's up? He's like falling all over himself. This has never happened to me before in life. Like, it's a thing I don't understand. I'm like, yes, this is, please pick up your beverages, right? Like, I'm like, okay, like, I don't know. And he's just going on, and I'm trying to get out of it, but I also don't want to like turn my back on this dude because that would be incredibly rude. And so finally, like, he got himself together. I'm like, yeah, man, good to see you, man. You know, all that stuff. And then I turn and I take two steps, and the dude looks at me and goes, are you J.A. Adande?
Oh, my
God. And I was like, no. And that was my breakaway. But I got where he's coming from. He knows me from Around the Horn. I am a dude on Around the Horn with an African name. So that put me in a box of two. I was either J.A. Adande or Bomani Jones, even though he may not have even know who. Like, I was who he thought I was, right? Like, I love it when people come up to me.
He got the name wrong.
Yeah, I love it when people come up to me and be like, so you on PTI? Nope. Keep it moving. I will escape from your technicality.
Yeah, where I know you from, you look familiar.
No, man, no.
I'm not giving you nothing. I'm not giving you nothing. I just give them a shrug.
Yeah.
If they say something like, you on TV, I'm like, yeah, ESPN, and I keep it moving. But that's the crazy part when you get to people. Because, like, I mean, I want to be kind and respectful. You get to people who are, like, super excited. That happened to me a bunch while I was in New York. Just walking around the city. It's a big city, lots of people. So you probably run into more people than you normally would. So you're inevitably going to run into more, like, people who watch shows. And, like, three or four times in the first day that I got there, people would come up and they'd be hype. Oh, ESPN, man, I love you. I love your work. Keep it up. What's your name again? I'd be like, man, if I was about to start feeling good about how excited you are, then you just ruined it. You undercut it all. But your point is right. It's like, it's just so many faces they see, they recognize, and they do know us apart, I would think. Yeah. They just don't know the names necessarily.
Yeah, no. That's one thing about it, man. Brand strong over here. Like, you just have, that's one thing you got to be, like, self-aware about. With this place, right, is the brand is stronger than you are, and therefore you could be one of a whole bunch of people. I tell you a funny one on this, even beyond that. Steve Smith was once telling me, basketball Steve Smith, he was once telling me about how, you know, he does I think he still does it, but NBA TV stuff at Grant Hill, and people would stay calling him Grant Hill, which is wild because Grant Hill is so famous. Like, not that Steve Smith is not famous, but he's not Grant Hill, right? Like, he never had the level of stardom that Grant Hill had. But Steve Smith said people stay coming up to him saying that he's Grant Hill, right? And I was like, God, that's crazy. That can't really happen. So, like, maybe the day after he told me this, we was this All-Star game in New Orleans. We standing on Bourbon or one of those, or Canal, one of those, you know. And some guy comes up to Steve and it's like, y'all got one of our players. Y'all got one of our Mississippi players now. And Steve's like, what? And he's like, That's right, Rodney Hood. He going to your school next year. That school was Duke.
Yeah, that's...
And I just look at Steve, because Steve's one of those guys that just always, like, you know, he good. He was just like,
yeah,
you know, that's just what it is.
Just kept it moving. I saw the people, so, like, getting people confused is a thing that's funny, and you and I have a good time with that, because sometimes it doesn't happen anymore, but I used to get called you, yes, which is, like, absurd, because, like, we don't look alike, but then I understand, and I was laughing because I was thinking, like, if I forgot my credentials, I could probably get backstage if I say I'm Anthony Mackie, depending on who's at the door.
Yes.
Like, I could pull off, put on some sunglasses. Yeah. If it's a white person over the age of 50, I might be like, hey, I'm Anthony Mackie.
Come on. Right, we got 45 seconds before we live. I got time to play with you.
I feel like I could get somebody. But I thought about that because over the weekend, I don't know how it got on my feed, but I saw somebody post a picture that they thought was with Snoop Dogg. And then people made fun of it because it was clearly a guy who was trying to look like Snoop Dogg. But he clearly wasn't Snoop Dogg, but I was fooled for a second. Mm-hmm. So, like, I laugh often because it's always white people who call me somebody else. Like, black people may not know my name, but they know that they don't think I'm somebody else. And so I'm looking at this picture and I'm like, oh, that had me. I thought it was Snoop Dogg. I got fooled and I was a little embarrassed. I didn't want to tell anybody or talk about it, but I know this is a safe space.
Yeah.
But what kind of person, like, I don't know. I shouldn't be judgmental, but like, you recognize that you might have a little resemblance to a celebrity and then you commit fully to that, like grow your hair out, cut your beard in the same direction, wear the same. What are you doing?
Well, don't forget when we had that whole run of Odell Beckhams around like 2016, 2017. Yeah. Everywhere you went, there was an Odell Beckham. It was like, dog, you ain't, like, we know you ain't Odell. But I was at, shoot, this is after I moved here. So I guess this is like 2018. Me and that same best friend I was talking about. Mm-hmm. We were at some spot and some Odell Beckham try to be was like in the spot. And it was so bad. We had met these two women. We were just talking to them at the bar. And one of them goes up, pokes him in the chest. Look at you, fake-ass Odell Beckham.
Oh, no.
I'm like, whoa, that was bold. But he was just kind of like, yeah, I know. Right? I mean, like, he was definitely trying to pull off the Odell Beckham. Now, I'm going to tell you this, though, about, like, white folks getting us mixed up. I ain't never going to get mad about that again. Like, I think they get a little too ambitious sometimes and make you into somebody. But you never work retail because you were too busy being a high-caliber athlete, right? So when I was in college, I worked at the Gap in Lenox in Atlanta. And, you know, you didn't have all the clothes on the floor. You know, everybody, obviously, but, you know, some of the clothes are in the stock room. And so people hit you and be like, hey, do you guys have this in a 33, 34? Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me go to the stock room and look. And so you go to the stock room, you go downstairs. Okay, got them. You come back up, and it's like, which one of these white people asked me for these pants? I am not sure. Now, the other level that you got to remember about the Gap, at least at that time, the Gap didn't have name tags. They had just little, like, 2-inch by 2-inch tags that said Gap on them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the person could see that, maybe not. But as you walking, right, your black ass is walking around there with these pants, and you try to figure out who the right person is, and you start walking up on the right one, you can see, like, the terror come up in their face. It's like the movie, and it starts zooming in on them like, closer and closer, and their eyes is getting, like, bigger and bigger. And then the other person who has been looking for you, though perhaps unsure which one you are, then you see, so, oh, okay, cool, that's the direction I'm going in, and then you just head the other way.
Oh my god. Yeah, I mean, I didn't work retail. I worked before football camps and all that stuff. I worked at Dragon House Express, which was a Chinese food court restaurant, and I had me a hustle going. if you came to the to that restaurant, I was like, I would scoop all your food and then charge you whatever. If you worked at the video game store, if you worked at anywhere that I wanted to be, you was going to get a couple extra scoops and also the employee discount. And I was going to come, I was 14, and I was going to come down, right down to your store immediately after my shift with my work shirt on. Hey, what's that? What's
yeah,
happening?
You remember
and
me?
No words were said. I need that new Madden. What you got on that new Madden? And we was going to work it out.
That was the thing about going to college in Atlanta. And so, like, Clark was about 15-minute drive, maybe, from Lenox, right? Subway, mm-hmm. MARTA ride, if you wanted to do that. Like, it's a MARTA station right at the mall. And so, we all worked somewhere in the mall. Mm-hmm. Like, dog, the network was so strong. The network was so strong. Like, okay, you got the plug on this. You got the plug on this. Oh, you got the movie plug. Oh, you got this, whatever it is. Like, oh, okay. For a little while, my homeboy had the plug on the movies because he worked at the movies. Man, that dude got a refund check. He bought a stereo, an ounce of weed, and quit his job all at one time. In fact, when he went to quit the job, he got the ounce of weed because the guy with the ounce of weed also worked at the movie theater.
The check was that big? Man, he need to work no more?
Well, yeah. And to be fair, he had a broken foot, so it was getting to be a little bit difficult to get up there anyway. But, I mean, it was like, you know, a refund. You in 1997, you in college, you get a check for like five G's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, that'll get you through the year.
Yeah, you can make that sort of thing work, but then we didn't have the plug on the movie no more.
You brought up that stinks, but you brought up weed, and I got the good fortune to talk to Sha'Carri Richardson at the post show. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my favorite interviews that I did, and talking to her before. So first of all, I go up and ask her, could she join us for the post show, and she's like, yes, anything for you, Black King. And I mean, she had me at that moment.
Yes.
Boy, I wasn't gonna ask no hard hitting questions. we not about to drill down. Like, I'm soft. I'm not about to go full Brian Gumbel on you. We gonna have a nice softball interview. But she like volunteered all the stuff that we talked about her being mature and her being the adult in this situation. Like, that felt real. And even when we weren't talking off camera, she was not trying to glorify her position that she was in, even though so many around her are. And she just kind of said that she feels like it's an opportunity for her to like speak about taking responsibility. And if that is something that people can grow from, then more power to them. But she was not here trying to encourage people to cape for her in the same way that it feels like they need to.
Yeah, I gotta say, since she ain't got to worry about the Olympics, and since they changed the laws in New York, you should have been like, yo, what you trying to do after the show? Like, you know, Desus and Mero up there. I bet they got it.
Yeah.
You know, like, look, ain't no drug test coming up. Just letting you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I didn't need to tell her that.
Nah, I want that's actually now what I want to know is, like, who was walking up on them being like, hey, you trying to go walk around the block for a second? Like, can we get back in? If we leave, can we get back in? We can get back. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sure. You've been in New York for a while. I remember, what was it, like 2 years ago, the first time I saw, it might have been 3 years ago, the first time I saw those weed buses.
Yes.
In New York. And it's like for people who haven't been, it's like a food truck.
Yeah, Let me tell you something about that weed bus, though. Go look them up on Yelp. It's the Pretendo Express. You can't just be right. You just can't be riding around selling weed out the van. Well, you can,
exactly,
but not with the labels on it.
That's exactly what I was gonna ask you. Is like, so it was. That's why I said it was 3 years ago, because I saw him again this weekend and I'd forgotten about him. I remember like 3 years ago things were different.
Yeah,
and I was like, what in the hell? Like, you just drive around? Like, this can't be real. So what is the purpose? They try to get your number or your address to mail it to you later? Like, I don't understand the point of having a weed truck.
From what I can tell, because I've never gone to it, they appear to be just selling Pretendo. Right? Like, what you gonna do?
Oh!
Like, yeah, what you gonna, like Pretendo edibles, you know what I mean? But that's what I'm saying. What you gonna do?
Yeah.
Come back with your receipt? Ask for your money back? You know what I'm saying? Like that's probably not going to be the case.
So so the police know this also, and they're just like,
but that's the
we
thing.
Know that y'all.
Yeah, police come kick down the door. You ain't gonna find no weed here.
You just gonna find pictures of weed.
Right.
Big weed stickers on the outside of my van.
Would you like a lollipop? You can safely give this to your children. It's just that Tendo. Like that. Yeah. That's how that winds up going down. Now, I don't know if you noticed this walking the streets though around here. I don't think we've talked about a sports topic yet, but who cares? I don't know if you noticed it, but since, for those who don't know, New York went legal, but a big step of them going legal is they codified it that anywhere you can smoke a cigarette, you can smoke a joint. Mm-hmm. Anywhere. So if you want to smoke a joint in front of your hotel, you want to smoke a joint just walking up and down the street, wherever it is, if you can smoke a cigarette there, you can smoke a joint there. And it now always smells like somebody smoking weed. And unless you're looking at them, you can't never tell exactly who it is. Like, it's just around. It's like, dang, okay, again. No matter where you are, it is in the air now in New York.
Yeah. Nah, so the ESPYs was on the rooftop. And nobody was smoking on the rooftop. But somebody was smoking real strong nearby, because it wafted to the rooftop. It was a couple times. It wasn't like the whole roof, but like you walk to a certain section of the roof, and I'm looking around just because, again, it's not like the LA one where it's in a big theater and there's like fans in there and there's a whole bunch of other people. Like, this is just like actors, actresses, and athletes. That's it. That's the only people that are up there, and like agents, maybe.
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, who is that bold? And I'm looking around. Who is so bold to be up here with all these cameras around, all this media just blowing trees? But it wasn't them. It was just coming up from the ground.
In LA, somebody would have. Like in LA, they just kind of like they are all the way to what's the big deal, right? Like like we're still not like there's a little bit of a what's the big deal kind of everywhere now, but not to LA. When LA is just it's a completely different discussion. Oregon is where they just talking about it like it's having a beer.
Yeah, that you're right, because I notice, like, I can remember all the times when I was in New York and I smelled it. I mean, that tells me that even I am not at the point where it's like, what's the big deal? Because, like, excuse me, it registers for me in a way that, like, smoking, I don't remember all the times I saw somebody smoking cigarettes. It's certainly right. Not quite at that point yet, but I guess it's going to get there.
Yeah, man. Did you watch some basketball last night?
Oh, yeah, I did. It was a great game. I enjoyed it.
Hey, man, you know, I had some discussions with the Phoenix Suns. They were discussions, right? I talked about the Devin Booker thing, where I was just, like, when he didn't make the All-Star team, I was looking at Devin Booker at that time as, like, one of very many good players in the West, but not a guy where you got to stand on the table when he doesn't make the All-Star team. And, of course, at his best in this postseason, at the very least, he has totally looked like, you know, a high-level star caliber player. But I don't know. Like, I hear people saying he's a superstar. I'm judicious in calling people superstars. Yeah. Like, if I say he's not a superstar, that's not an insult in the way that people would think, because I just, like, I give that to, like, three or four people. That's just, you know, that's just where I am. But apparently, them refs think he a superstar. When that dude did not get that sixth foul, I was like, damn, I did not realize that that he had won the MVP.
I mean, I appreciated it, honestly, but it wasn't fair. But, I mean, they got the points anyway. Giannis scored, got the rebound and put it in anyway. But, like, I like to see them close out these games. But you think back to, like, the clear path foul that he just gave away. Like, that's the type of stuff that, like, just seems dumb looking back. Like, you are the scorer. You can't be doing those sorts of things. But we have to give Bud a little credit, right?
No, we don't. He adjusted into common sense.
That's credit. He wasn't doing that before. Like, I mean, even, and I know this isn't new, but, like, for this series, picking up Chris Paul full court, having Holiday do that, like, it seemed like it may have paid off at the end of game four, because Chris Paul was not Chris Paul.
Let me ask a question. We sure that was Bud's idea, or did Drew Holiday decide he was going to do that himself? Like, at some point it just get there. Oh, man, I'm telling all these stories from way back in the day. I'll never forget this. For those of you who don't know, when I was growing up, my parents worked at Prairie View A&M University. You may have heard of Prairie View in the context of what was the longest losing streak in American football. I think they lost 80 straight games, and we were there, like, in the midst of it, right? So one of my mom's students, because my mom's students really liked her and would like to, they would do things for me, which was, in essence, doing things for her, you know? And they liked me enough, so it was cool. So this dude told me he was going to take me to get a haircut because he had a dude in the drawing that was a, you know, really good barber. And I remember that because that was the first time that I, like, really put the two and two together. Like, oh, this guy smells like weed, right? He was taking forever cutting my hair, too. He was, you know, he was high as bird. Some other dude came in there and he played, like, really competitive flag football. Mm-hmm. Like, he played that kind of flag football where the dudes were out there with mouthpieces. Because, you know, because they, like, that's whatever, right? But he was out there. And I'll just never forget, he was talking about the coach at Prairie View at the time and how there's no way in the world that we taking no orders from this man. He was like, think about this. They losing every game. That man driving a Lexus. He's like, man, ain't no. I'm the coach. Like, he said, that was just because ain't nobody listening to Beard. I'm the coach. And I feel like at some point they had to make that call on Bud. Like, I was the basketball teams all the time. Maybe. Like, look, we coaching.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that can happen in basketball. It's unlikely to happen in football. So I guess we should give the Bucks credit. We don't have to go to him specifically, but, like, putting Chris Middleton at the, like, playmaker spot and pick and rolls, like, that worked towards the end of the game. That seemed relatively new, something they broke out in the last couple games. Like, it seems like we give Bud a hard time for not making adjustments. Whether he's making them or not, it seems that they are making adjustments. And one of the adjustments is just let Giannis be Giannis. Even if he's going to shoot a couple bad threes a game, he is going to do an incredibly athletic block. Dog. Or something at some point throughout that.
That block was equally athletic and also, like, mentally brilliant.
Right.
Like, thing, I said this on Twitter about it, that ball went up. And people are like, Booker threw a bad pass. I'm like, no, not really. Nah. Like, you throw it as high as you can in that case. I understand that. But for Giannis to look at it and realize what had happened and then be like, okay, now I'm going to play it after he's caught it. And Ayton was out of gas. That's the other part, too. Like, for Giannis to still have the level of energy required to make that play in the last minute of an NBA Finals game is insane. And I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. I ain't going to call him out here, but he was kind of on the, I ain't seen Giannis do it in the clutch. He's like, I don't want to, you know, talk about him like they be talking about LeBron, and then went straight to talking about him like they talk about LeBron. That's a clutch play right there. All right? Like, that is a huge clutch play in that moment that literally, I think he's the only player in the NBA who can make that play. Like, I think Anthony Davis could get
That's
there,
the
but I don't
name.
Know if Anthony Davis is strong enough.
That's the only other
the
name that came to mind. And your point is right. I said it was hugely athletic, but I watched that replay like 10 times. And if you watch Giannis and you watch that replay, you can see that it's anticipation also. Like, he recognized what was happening. It wasn't just a reaction to what was going on. He recognized, and as a defensive back, you see this often where you're like, all right, if I take away this, you know, I know where you're going to go. So, like, he did that. He was like, all right, I'm going to take away this. And I'm going to show this as if it's open, and then I know exactly how much time I have to get back there. Like, it felt to me like that was some people mentally have the capacity to do that, but obviously don't have the physical capacity, the size and explosiveness. So I'm not trying to minimize how incredibly explosive and athletic it was, but it also seemed like a play that he only made because he understood what they were trying to do to him. And that's, man, he's – talk about superstar. You said you only give it to
he's one.
Two or three
he's
people.
One. He's one.
If he was, let's not forget that his knee went backwards. Backwards, Bomani. Backwards. He just came off of 240 point games and has a block in the finals that is only paralleled by LeBron's chase down block. Like, backwards. He's a superstar.
Yeah, he's it. He's it. He is flawed, but that happens.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
We all are. We all are, Bomani Jones.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Like, that was – and it was wild about it. I was feeling like the whole game – we getting close to the end, but the whole game, it felt like Phoenix was the better team and Milwaukee was always going to get up to, like, maybe down by three, but they weren't going to take the lead. And then they took the lead, and then Phoenix ran and took the lead by about eight. And it was just like Phoenix just felt like the better team. And then you looked up and remembered the Bucks had the best player in the series.
Right.
You know? Yep. And Chris Middleton, who actually, for the total of that game, wasn't really that good. He just put up a whole bunch of shots. But in the end, he was like, hi, guys, I'm here, and we about to do this. I ain't scared. Got it done.
It came down to, I think it was probably like a couple minutes left, and the score was tied. Devin Booker came down and took a shot and missed it. Went back the other way. Middleton hit his shot. It was almost the exact same shot as a screen, and Middleton hits like that little elbow area. And talk about mid-range game, too. Like, this series has felt like a ton of mid-range stuff when we all kind of accepted that analytics said mid-game was dead, mid-range was dead, but that's what all this feels like, is who can win that part of the floor is who's going to win this series. And the last thing that jumped out to me is possessions. So it doesn't matter what adjustments you make if you're going to get 20 more possessions than your opponent. And that's just offensive rebounds and turnovers. And that is some wreck, like, 8-year-old basketball coaching right there. Yep. Let's crash the boards and let's not give it to the other team. Yep. And they get more possessions, they're going to win.
That's an adjustment I will give Bud credit for, because he is typically averse to offense. Like, crashing the boards is a philosophical thing
transition.
That he does not believe.
He's a transition defense guy.
Yeah, he believes in getting back, and they have done that. And I will say this on turnovers, because people talking about Chris Paul. Yo, don't forget, dude just had that Rona. Like, we've seen that, like, that the attention to detail stuff tends to be, like, what gets people when they come back. So, you know, that is a consideration. But this has been Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth. Check him out all over the good ESPN and here every Friday. Appreciate it as always, sir.
Appreciate you, my friend.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this here 3 times a week. Daniel Dopp, thanks for your help this week. He and Dave Presley handled everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.